Welcome to Understanding Israel-Palestine. I am Jamie Jackson. In this episode, we listen to a panel discussion about The Settlers, a documentary film presenting predominantly Jewish settlers in the West Bank and their allies. On November 13, registrants for an online film salon sponsored by Voices from the Holy Land gathered to hear a panel of experts talk about the film. A video recording of the complete 60-minute panel discussion can be viewed at www.voicesfromtheholyland.org. The panel's moderator was Laura Friedman, president of the Foundation for Middle East Peace and a leading authority on U.S. policy in the Middle East. We begin this episode as she introduces the two panelists, Israeli film director Shimon Dotan and acclaimed author Rabbi Yaakov Shapiro. She then leads the discussion.
This is a remarkable film, and I hope it really is available and watched by a wide audience. It stands really as an historical document. It's a vital piece of the puzzle, I think, for understanding the reality on the ground today in Israel-Palestine. It's a key part for any discussion about the future. So to talk about this film, we are really fortunate to have with us today, first of all, Shimon Dotan. Shimon is an award-winning filmmaker of multiple narrative and documentary films, including his film, The Settlers, which we're discussing today. At present, he is teaching political cinema at New York University and film directing at the New School University in New York. We are also fortunate to have with us another learned perspective, Rabbi Yaakov Shapiro. Rabbi Shapiro is an international speaker, an author, and a pulpit rabbi for over 30 years, now emeritus. He currently serves on the board of directors of the International Council for Middle East Studies, and his most recent work, The Empty Wagon, Zionism's Journey from Identity Crisis to Identity Theft, published in 2018. It's considered the most comprehensive work written on the subject. Shimon, I want to start out with you. Can you talk about first, why did you make this film? What do you hope people will learn from it? What, if anything, surprised you the most that you found in making the film?
Hello, everybody. Before I did The Settlers, I did a documentary called Hot House, where I explored the reality of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. And I did that in good part because I was troubled by the major distinction between the Israelis' approach and Palestinians' approach to those prisoners. In the Israeli streets, they were assassins, children killers. In the Palestinian streets, they were national heroes. This gap between two populations with great proximity to each other, with such a deep perception of horrific acts that happens in their midst, called for, I thought, a special attention. Following that, I was actually curious to see how the extremists on the Israeli side looks. And that was the beginning of the project on the settlers. So I thought learning extremism on both sides can teach us something that may keep us away from the natural depiction that we tend to do when we observe extreme events, is to paint them in black and white, which never actually secure or in effect a helpful representation of any reality. We often tend to formulate our views, our perception of the world on buzzwords, on a very limited and often misleading information. And at time, actually many times, on our own prejudice. And no doubt that each one of us brings with him a prejudice of some kind when he explores a phenomenon that he's observing. So what I try to do in this film and in other films is to portray a more nuanced depiction of the elements in play when we witness a complex reality. And the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is probably one of the most complex reality that we're facing today in the world politics, religion to a good degree. I don't think that there is an objective representation. I do not claim for a moment that The Settlers is an objective representation of the reality in the West Bank. Of course it's not. It's not for many reasons, but the most humble reason that I can put forward is because I did it. I'm an Israeli, I consider myself a Zionist. I am completely, deeply opposed to the settlement enterprise. At the same time, I'm terribly aware and worried about the destructive impact that the settlements in the West Bank are causing to the state of Israel, to the idea of Zionism. So one of the things that I learned, to my amazing surprise, is that people want to talk. People want their story to be recorded. People want to talk on camera. The only thing they are often what they are concerned about is they will be that what they say will be misrepresented, that it will be manipulated, etc. I do not have, and I did not, to my best belief, did not misrepresent any speaker that I interviewed, and I made it clear to them. But furthermore, when I approach settlers or people, the extremists of them all, I told them, I am against the settlements. I think it's destructive to the state of Israel. Now let's talk. Tell me why I'm wrong. And in most cases, it was a very positive start to a conversation that in many cases yielded surprising and at times embarrassing for me results to hear those answers from fellow Israelis.
Rabbi Shapiro, I want to ask you more or less the same question. Really, what are your thoughts about the film? And I guess, what are the most important things you think people should learn from it? And maybe more important for you, what, if anything, surprised you or did anything surprise you?
I really enjoyed the film. I thought it was remarkable. What I saw was how we can comprehend how incomprehensible. On one hand, you have these people talking about the greater Israel. We have these maps going from to the Tigris and Euphrates down to the Mediterranean Sea, to the Nile River. On the other hand, you have the same group of people, the settlers, claiming that the state of Israel is illegitimate. On one hand, you have the nationalism of the settlers. Clearly, they're extremely nationalistic, but on European nationalism, that's what was mentioned. On the other hand, you had a settler saying that he rejects the whole concept even of a homeland because it's European nationalist, it's not Jewish. So you have these nationalist settlers, you have them, European nationalism has infiltrated their ideology. You have them saying that they reject European nationalism. In fact, they reject the most innocuous idea of the homeland in favor of Jewishness. You have them talking about the greater Israel. You have them rebelling against the Israeli government. You have all of these, they're not contradictory, they are nuanced things, and it causes the listener to think and to ask more questions and to say, hey, if I want to understand these settlers, I really have to put my mind to it, Lori. I have access over here to the settlers, and I see now that there's a lot more to it than meets the eye, and I really want to know more. Later on in the film, you had this group of settlers, how they can't invite Arabs or Palestinians into Bat Ayin. And one of them said, hey, don't tell that to them. Don't say that on camera. And the other one said, well, if you didn't want me to say that, you shouldn't have invited me. So you had like this contrast between them portraying themselves versus the way they really are. So I really like the contrast between the impression that they wanted to give versus what they really gave over. On one hand, these are portrayed, and they really are, as regular, normal people, somebody who could meet in the grocery store or on a train or a bus. They speak normally, they talk normally, they act normally, they have their wives and their children. And on the other hand, they describe ideology that is so incomprehensible to so many people. And you have this contrast that you have somebody who seems just like you, but is so different than you. And what surprised me? Well, what surprised me was actually that they really did reveal to you more than I thought they would. That guy, there was one guy that actually explained how many kilos of dynamite he would have used to blow up the Dome of the Rock. And he even told you, said, I'm explaining to you everything. And they did that without fear of reprisals, not from government, not from police, not from the press, not from their neighbors, not from anybody. Here's a guy claiming, he's bragging about the fact that he wanted to blow up the Dome of the Rock. And he's explained to you exactly how he wanted to do it. He's explaining to anybody who wants to do it how they can do it, how much dynamite they need, and nothing. They're just willing to do that. That was very surprising to me. Otherwise, I thought it was a really excellent portrayal of the settlers and their self-contradictory ideology.
And I want to start again with Shimon. And can you situate them as part of the broader population of Israel and talk about how they fit in with the Israeli body politic writ large?
This is not the West Bank. These are not all the settlers. These are the few settlers that I spoke with. And this is an edited version of 100 hours of filming. So the recognition of the viewer that what he gets is a very limited view into this wider world, it's valuable, is a part of my presentation. So I find it valuable to any act of representation, because the recognition that what you present has limits is a part of getting inhaling the subject matter in a more comprehensive way. Sort of declare your limitation or allude to them, and that will make your presentation, I hope, more accurate, more valuable, more complete. As for where the settlers, how do they represent, if at all, the people of Israel, etc. I don't have a clear answer to that, but my impression is, from what I've experienced through those long months that I was filming there and following the events, they are, in effect, a real representation of the people of Israel. Not so much of Tel Aviv, not so much of what we call Ashfela, the coastline, etc. But to some degree, yes, because about 80% of the population in the West Bank is there for one and only one reason. That's economic reason. They have housing. And housing in Israel is extremely expensive all over the country. In the West Bank, you can have a good house, a good apartment, good condition, and it will cost you much, much less than in Israel. The problem, though, is that once somebody has a house, it becomes a home. And very soon, one that arrives from economical reason will find himself just defending his home, or believing that that's the home that he has to protect. So it turned, even if not to the degree that the extremists are, but it turned many of those what we call economic settlers into, I wouldn't call them ideological settlers, but definitely individuals who have some interest in protecting their home. So when we make this distinction, about 20% are hardcore believers in the settlement enterprise, in the right of the Jewish people to inherit all the land that it's written in the Bible, ignoring the fact that at least three different maps are attributed to the whole land of Israel. So it's not science, yes? The representation is as Israel as a whole, but it has a dynamic within the population in the West Bank. So how does it represent the election in Israel? That's tragically, we face the reality that is the ongoing settlement enterprise in the West Bank, the aggression and the lawlessness that infects the country. And we know from history that aggression is a gateway. Once you open it, you can never predict how far it will go and how high it will go. And we see now, we do not know where it will take us, but we're in a very critical point in time in Israel as a democratic state, as a liberal state.
You are listening to the November 13 panel discussion about the documentary film, The Settlers. I am Jamie Jackson.
Thank you. When I was watching the film and listening to you answer, I was remembering years ago, analysis that I did with a guy named Dror Etkes, who's one of the people on the ground who monitor settlements. And we did an analysis of the voting patterns of settlers over the years. And what you saw was, even in the so-called economic settlements, the longer people stayed, the more they voted as if they were politically motivated settlers. Rabbi Shapiro, I want to ask you to talk about how you, in your mind, in your analysis, how you break down settlers and the settler movements as part of the broader Israeli public ethos and political world.
Shimon was 100% correct when he said that the settlers don't represent at all Theodore Herzl's Zionism. In fact, Herzl, when he created Zionism, he had a vision for Israel where the state did not even speak Hebrew. He also thought, by the way, on the last page of his book, that as soon as Zionism gets off the ground, these were his words, anti-Semitism would end. He believed that the reason why anti-Semitism exists is because the Jews aren't a national people the way others are. Herzl pretty much envisioned the Jews being a Swiss-speaking Switzerland made up of Jews. Theodor Herzl himself didn't consider himself, well, he did say he had a dream where Moses brought him up to the sky and they considered him the son of the Messiah. And he had those kind of ideas, but he wasn't, his Jewish identity, well, you know the old joke, what's the difference between Herzl and Jesus? Jesus celebrated Hanukkah, Herzl celebrated Christmas. He didn't circumcise his son, and he did celebrate Christmas. However, Herzl wasn't the only one to be a founding father of Zionism. If you're looking at the settlers, you need to look more at somebody like Vladimir Jabotinsky. Vladimir Jabotinsky was the founder of the revisionist Zionist party, which later morphed into the Herut, which later became the Likud. Jabotinsky was highly militant. He was influenced by fascism, although I wouldn't call him a fascist. Jabotinsky said clearly, Zionism is a settler colonial movement, and there is no way in history any indigenous people allowed settler colonial movements to take over their land, regardless of how you treat them. The only way to succeed is through an iron wall, through military might. Jabotinsky said that the ABCs, the Aleph Beis, the Hebrew alphabet, is to teach children learn how to shoot. That was Jabotinsky. And he said an amazing thing. And I want to quote you. I have it in front of me from something called the Book of Beitar. Quote, "This is the third attempt to forge the Zionist movement. Pinsker, that was Leo Pinsker, made the first attempt. Herzl the second. And we're currently engaged in the third. The revisionist movement, that's Jabotinsky's militant movement, will develop and grow. It'll become a majority within Zionism, and then will become Zionism itself. Beitar, that was his youth group, a militant group, will become the moral and spiritual lawgiver for all Jewish youth." That's what Jabotinsky predicted. He predicted that it will not only become a majority, but it will become Zionism itself. Now, take something like Jabotinsky in combination with Rabbi Cook, that was portrayed in the film. Rabbi Cook believed that Israel, its wars, its tanks, its guns are actually holy, that the state of Israel's expansion is not the beginning of the Messianic coming, but it's the unfolding of the Messianic coming. The beginning is long gone. And that as Israel expands, that is a representation of Messianic times. And that it cannot, not that we may not, it's forbidden to give up any land. You cannot give up any land. It will not happen. These are people that combine the militarism of Jabotinsky, the messianic sanctification of militarism of Rabbi Cook. And not only that, but the relationship they have with the land is, Zionism took their intellectual origins from so many different places. Jabotinsky was actually a fan of Mussolini. Different people took it from different places. The settlers absorbed the land relationship of somebody like Aaron David Gordon, who said things like that, the land is God, things like that. Jabotinsky's militarism, Rabbi Cook's sanctification of all of the above, and they come up with this their version of Zionism, because there were many versions of Zionism, if you'd ask. And yes, Herzl Zionism and Jabotinsky Zionism and Achad Ha'am Zionism and the Aaron David Gordon Zionism, they're all they were very different. The settlers took a combination of so many of these things and supercharged it with religion. They created something that to me bears no resemblance to Judaism, and to many Zionists bears no resemblance to Zionism. Kind of like, you know, you take hydrogen and oxygen, you put it together, you get neither hydrogen nor oxygen, you get water. What the combination, this gestalt that they created, a whole that bears no resemblance to the sum of its parts, is a nationalist, religious, paganistic type ideology, which they believe is all religious. This Rabbi Cook, who was presented in the film, his father, Rabbi Abraham Cook, he took nationalism, Hegelian nationalism, actual 19th century nationalism, and he repeated it to his Orthodox Jewish students as if it was Jewish mysticism, without revealing to them the source from whence it came. It was nationalism. So they came up with a whole new, completely new ideas that if you're a Zionist, but you, let's say you're not religious, you still have religion inside you and you're acting religious whether you know it or not. And you're acting on behalf of God whether you know it or not. And it was nationalism, really. And that's why they received nationalism and they act nationalistic. Even though in the film that settler said, we reject the concept of a homeland because that's a European concept and they don't realize that they are European nationalists in combination with all of these above because of the type of religious studies that they were taught. And there you have it. There you have the contradictions and the extremism and the newfangled type of Judaism and Zionism that the settlers represent. What to do about it is another question, but that's where it comes from in a nutshell.
And Shimon, I'm coming back to you. So can you talk about the role of Americans, Jewish and Christian, within the settler movement, both supporting it internally and supporting it from abroad?
Before we go to your question, I just want to address in a few words the comment that Rabbi Shapiro just made about various branches, that satellites that surrounded Zionism, but ignored to talk about Zionism itself. Zionism, to the best of my knowledge, never aspired to fulfill any messianic prophecies or to bring to the redemption of the land of Israel. The only objective of Zionism at its inception and well into several decades after, and I'm talking about the first Zionist Congress and everything that followed, and after Herzl's death, the objective was to provide safe haven to persecuted Jews, period. And Herzl, with his really, he was a real visionary, and he did see the darkening clouds over Europe, and he felt the urgency that Jews around in Europe, mostly actually he thought of the east side of Europe, but the center, including Germany, was as well in his horizon. He saw it coming, and tragically, his daughter, his young daughter, Trudy, died at Theresienstadt. Now, to make it now, or to present Zionism, not that it did not have elements of it, but it was not a result of the nationalism and other movements that were present in Europe at the time. And all the other elements that you mentioned, Rabbi Shapira, that was a remnant that came from Eastern Europe, Russia, Romania, etc., where the belief, they came as idealists to Israel, even before, separated from Zionism, with a belief that the people who work the land own the land. So that was all. There was no, you presented it as a paganic attraction to the land. I don't think so. You know, I grew up in a moshav, which is an agricultural cooperative or so, and I have some intimate knowledge with the people who were there. It's not, you know, this type of portray that, so people who work the land, own the land. This is a noble idea, I would say, don't you?
Well, I would actually disagree that Zionism was a idea to make a safe haven for Jews. Leo Pinsker, who was the first one who wrote a Zionist manifesto, said that the reason why people don't like Jews is because they don't have a land. And if they would have a land, they wouldn't be ghosts and people wouldn't hate them. On the last page of Theodor Herzl's The Jewish State said, as soon as Zionism starts, nobody would hate Jews anymore. At the first Zionist convention, Max Nordau made a whole speech about the identity crisis that they had. Zionists wanted to change the Jewish personality from the ghetto Jew, or the Golus Jew, as they called it, that they made fun of, and wanted to make, it's a word in German that Nordau used to use, muscle Jews. Achad Ha'am didn't even want a Jewish state. All he wanted was a cultural Jewish place.
I really want you to zoom in on Rabbi Meir Kahane. Can you dig more into where that comes from, particularly the Kahanist trend, which is now very much in the news?
Sure. Actually, he went to the same school that I, he was older than me, but he went to the same school that I did for a couple of years. They prohibited us to have anything to do with him because he was so out there. Meir Kahane existed in, let's say, the 60s and the 70s in America, at which point in time there were a lot of racial tensions or ethnic tensions in New York City between, let's say, the Jews and you had the Black Panthers, you had all these, these ethnic tensions. And Meir Kahane, he decided that he's going to use the methods of survival and flourishing and Jewish pride. That was a very important thing to his school of thought, Jewish pride. Their idea of Jewish pride is be stronger than the next guy. He used to set up martial arts schools for Jewish kids. I was recruited. I never went, but I was recruited, solicited, as were my friends, to go to them to protect Jews in the street, carry weapons with you, of course, only legal ones. And he grew up with this idea during a time and in a place where there was a demand for it.
You have been listening to an edited recording of the November 13 online panel discussion about Shimon Dotan's documentary film, The Settlers. The film can be found on YouTube. A video recording of the complete 60-minute panel discussion is available at www.voicesfromtheholyland.org. This is Understanding Israel-Palestine. I am Jamie Jackson. Thank you for listening.